Today, on The Exam Room.
It was actually my boyfriend at the time who introduced me to that line of work. And my alternative, what I thought might be my alternative, was waiting tables. And there were no vegan restaurants back then. And for me, that wasn't an option to go and serve people meat. So, I mean, that's a big kind of excuse, and so call it what you may, but it was just the thing I could do that was going to bring in money, was going to pay the bills, and yeah, get me out of college without debt.
I can't imagine, and this is the last question I have about this industry, I can't imagine that there are many who are in that industry that are eating a healthy plant-based diet either.
Oh, completely. And this was back in 2002. Right. And most people didn't even know what the word vegan meant back then, much less, you know, thinking about plant-based eating. That was not a thing, but it was who I was. And I was very clear on that.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, and we are raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world in great cities like Tempe, Arizona, Newark, New Jersey, and Rajkot, India. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 22 of season 7, number 521 overall. And today we are joined by a first-time guest who has had a topsy-turvy around-the-world journey to become recognized as one of the globe's top personal trainers by not just bodybuilding.com, but Shape Magazine as well. That is big time. Ella Majors is her name, but you may know her better as Sexy Fit Vegan. Ella is also a published author and podcast host, but what she is more than anything else is an inspiration. Because you see, that topsy-turvy around-the-world journey took her into a dark life at times, one that was filled with disordered eating and an abusive relationship, and even had a dalliance into the exotic dancing industry, which is so counter to who she is as a human being. Ella is a bright star who, while lacking confidence and belief in herself at times, still never wavered in her love and compassion and belief in others, including animals, whom she's been advocating for since she was a young teenager. I mean, Ella was eating a plant-based diet when people didn't even know what that meant. And that makes her a trailblazer who clawed her way back to a healthy life, found her purpose, found her calling, and found that helping others and herself is when she is at her best. And thus, the Sexy Fit Vegan brand was born, an uplifting, inspiring, educating effort that is changing lives around the world, helping people tap into their entire potential. Such a great story. So that conversation with Ella is on the way. And after the interview, we're going to be taking a little bit of a detour and talking about a fast food giant who recently sent shockwaves throughout the restaurant industry. Their customers are not happy. Insiders are definitely skeptical. But there could still be a major silver lining here. And we're going to be getting into all of that buzz after this. Because right now, it is time to get sexy and fit. Ella Majors joins me on The Exam Room. Ella, thanks for being here.
No, I'm so happy to be here with you, Jack.
You know, when you and I met in Omaha last September, I was like, there's something about this Ella Majors woman. I just absolutely am enthralled by it. And then you got on the stage and you shared your story in front of hundreds of people. And I was captivated because looking at you today, people would have no idea of the struggle that you once went through. So my goal today, Ella, is just to inspire the masses, talk a lot about plant-based diets, how it's been beneficial. And then, of course, how somebody who is not eating a whole lot of meat and animal protein was able to rise to the top of the bodybuilding game. So lots of ground to cover. But first of all, let's just start with your incredible background because, again, looking at you today, Ella, no clue that there was once something dark lurking in the shadows behind you at all times. What got you here today?
Whoa, that's a big question.
Isn't it though?
It really is. I always do like to take it back to when I was a little kid, because that's when I really discovered my purpose in life. And so I've been an athlete since I was 5 years old. And when I was 7, I got in the car after school one day, and my mom had picked me up to take me to gymnastics practice as usual. And she asked how my day was. And I told her, you know, Mom, we learned about this guy named Daniel Boone. And for any of the listeners who may not know who Daniel Boone is, he was one of our first American folk heroes. He carried around a shotgun. He wore a raccoon hat. He was a wilderness guy. And, you know, I said, we learned about him and he's supposed to be a hero, Mom, but he's not. He was so mean. He killed animals and he ate them. And my mom was really honest with me. And she said, you know, Ella, we're really fortunate nowadays, we get to go to the grocery store to buy our meat. We don't have to do that ourselves anymore. And it was at that moment that I really connected the meat on my plate with the animal that it actually was. And I was pretty horrified. And I told her, well, you know what? I'm never doing that again. And that was it. I never ate meat again. So that was the start. I really felt like not only did I become a vegetarian at that point, but I felt like it was my calling to be a voice for animals and to help other people make that connection and make the transition away from meat. And then as I started to learn more, and this is back, you guys, I'm 43 years old now. So that was 1987. And for the next maybe 7, 8 years, I started learning about factory farming and where dairy and eggs came from and how they were produced. And so by the time I turned 15, I went fully vegan and became an activist before I could drive a car. So my teenage years were filled with activism. I really thought I could make the biggest impact at that point by spreading awareness. In my young mind, I thought, well, you know what? If only everybody else knew what I knew, they're going to go vegan just like me. So I did protests and leafleting, and bless my parents' hearts, I would have them drop me off in downtown Chapel Hill to sit in a cage on the side of the road to demonstrate the conditions.
At 15 years old, like you're banging this drum, you're leading the charge. I would imagine, I mean, high school is such a judgmental time, and God bless your parents for supporting you, but like, were you ostracized among your peers? What was that like for you?
You know, it's amazing, because at the time, and even looking back, I was, you know, I just knew in my heart that it was the right thing to do. And so it didn't ever, I never felt embarrassed about, I never felt, and I didn't feel angry towards other people. I just really thought, you know, here's my role in the world is to let people know, because I didn't know until I knew. And so I was in middle school still when I was getting boxes from PETA and of little buttons that said, you know, boycott L'Oreal, boycott Revlon, companies that tested on animals. And I would be passing them out in school and I would just be full of energy and life saying, hey, you guys, we can do something about what's going on. Here's what's going on. And here, let's do something. We get to boycott them. And so it never really occurred to me. And I think because of that, and because I was so positive about it, with all these hopes of how we can make a difference, that people were actually really receptive. Though I don't think anybody actually turned vegan in my years protesting, like in my school, but they really didn't. They didn't ostracize me at all. I was really friends with kind of everybody. I had my groups of friends and. It was just kind of who I was, and I was really comfortable with that part of who I was. There was other parts of who I wasn't comfortable with.
15. I mean, that's amazing. Geez, Louise. I mean, you've got such a strong head on your shoulders, which surprises me, though, that as you go down this road and you're doing this, such a strong human being could still have such struggles, because I know that eventually disordered eating kind of crept into your life as well.
Yes, it sure did. So I actually got diagnosed with depression uh, in in high school when I was 16, started going to a therapist. I started, you know, it was like I had so much compassion, you know, looking back now, I had so much compassion for animals and this great sense of purpose that kept me going. But looking back, I realized I had very little compassion for myself. And so, yeah, by the time I kind of realized that a lot of people didn't want to know the truth, and I felt like, you know, what I was so hopeful about, just, I thought everybody would go vegan just like me. When I told them what was going on, and when I realized that that wasn't working, I think that was in part what sent me down a hole of kind of this path of self-destructive behavior, starting with abusive older boyfriends. In college, I graduated with a degree in social work, but I was an exotic dancer in college. I developed a very unhealthy relationship. I really disconnected from my body at that point. Then I went into the fitness industry after college and became a trainer and decided my new how for fulfilling this purpose was to become an inspiration in terms of how I looked. So building this strong, lean physique that caused everyone to come up and say, "Ella, how are you doing that?" And of course, I'd be so happy to share with them that I was doing it by eating exclusively plants. Now, because I was putting so much pressure on myself, I started to develop disordered eating habits and body dysmorphia as well at that point.
Oh boy, there's a mental juxtaposition. And I hate to veer too far off the path on this show, but I have to ask you, you know, it seems like you have such compassion for other beings in this universe, not a lot for yourself. And a lot of people, probably their ears perked up when they heard you say that you were an exotic dancer in college. But I'm assuming here, and not to pry too much, did you use the money from that to pay for your college tuition, you know, so you wouldn't have to be saddled with debt when you were coming out on the other side?
Yeah. And, you know, the other funny part about that was it was actually my boyfriend at the time who introduced me to that line of work. And, you know, my alternative, what I thought might be my alternative, was waiting tables. And there were no vegan restaurants back then. And for me, that wasn't an option to go and serve people meat. So, I mean, that's a big kind of excuse, and so call it what you may, but yeah, it was just the thing I could do that was going to bring in money, was going to pay the bills, and yeah, get me out of college without debt.
What did that do for your self-esteem, which sounds like, you know, you had already been struggling with depression? I never really spent a whole lot of time in that environment, to be honest with you, but I would imagine that the positivity there may be lacking for most individuals who happen to be working in that career path. And that's not a slight whatsoever against them, but had you not been struggling with depression, just out of curiosity, do you think you would have made that same decision?
Absolutely not. No, it's an environment that is very unhealthy and on every level. And it was something that they would keep, I mean, just to be honest, they would keep Xanax in the back for me because it was so out of alignment with who I really was. And I was leading this double life. I was in college going to school and getting my degree in social work and doing internships and working with the homeless and in daycares and doing all this good work with human beings. And then that was my weekend job. And that's where I spent my weekends, and my boyfriends were drug dealers. They're dead or in jail now. One just got stabbed to death a few years ago. So it was a really harrowing environment. And I was into drugs and alcohol on the weekends. And then I would go and I got a 3.87. And what I say really saved my life, honestly, was this deep sense of purpose, was this deep sense of compassion, knowing that I had a job to do in the world. And maybe I didn't know how I was supposed to be doing it at that time, which was hard and depressing. And I knew I was here to do something bigger. So I kept going. I got up every morning and I did what I had to do at the time. and vowed once I got out of college that I would never go back.
Do you think that on a subconscious level, the fact that you were studying social work in college, you were also trying to kind of save yourself or help yourself at the same time, even though it sounds like you didn't have a lot of compassion yet for yourself at that time? Do you think that that's kind of what was driving you maybe a little bit in retrospect?
Absolutely. I think that's certainly part of it. And interestingly, when I started to realize that, I went back to school a little later to get my master's degree in social work when I really started to realize the lack of compassion I had for myself. And I did that one knowing that in part that I really needed to help myself in order to best help help the world.
But all the while, you're continuing to eat the plant-based diet, correct? So like you're still fueling your body with these healthy foods. I can't imagine, and this is the last question I have about this industry, I can't imagine that there are many who are in that industry that are eating a healthy plant-based diet either. You would be a rare bird, so to speak.
Oh, completely. And this was, now this was back in 1998 to 2002. Right. And most people didn't even know what the word vegan meant back then, much less, you know, thinking about plant-based eating. That was not a thing, but it was who I was. And I was very clear on that, that that was just a part of who I was. Those were my core beliefs. I don't know if I was a slaughtered animal in my past life. I don't know where that came from and why I was able to connect with that at such a young age. But in reality, I mean, if we think about it, I mean, most people have so much love and compassion for their pets, right? Like that is an innate thing. You stick a baby in a crib with a bunny and their first reaction is going to be loving on that bunny, not trying to eat it. So I think that's innate in all of us. It's just that the society's programming is so strong from the time we're born, parents, teachers, friends, TV, the industries, you know, advertising, that most people are not able to connect with that that idea that all animals are equal in their ability to feel, to love, to want to live. But I think we all naturally want to help animals live, not to kill them.
Yeah, so let's talk about that because it's. I agree with you that we're kind of born with this instinctual feeling to love something initially, and then as life progresses, more often than not, the majority of us get reprogrammed. But then you were able to deprogram that and come back around. What are some steps that we can take to kind of help us reconnect with, you know, our initial instincts, the way that you have embraced that to lead a fuller, happier, more vibrant life?
Yes, well, I do have a methodology for kind of reprogramming our minds and our behaviors. And it's a 3P process. So the first part of that process, so whenever we go to make a decision, and these can be decisions that we usually just make automatically, like reaching for yogurt for breakfast, right? And the idea is, the first P is to pause. That pause is the most important. I call it the power pause, because the most challenging part about it is remembering to take it. We've got to really get present to our decisions. But we pause and activate our higher self. And that higher self is that self that hasn't been programmed by society. This is our true self, our true nature. And you kind of activate that and approach yourself and the world with curiosity and compassion. And from there, we go through the second P, which is the process. And that's to acknowledge and accept whatever it is you're feeling. Without ridicule. It's that curiosity and compassion piece, compassion for yourself, compassion for all living beings. And then you become aware of the thoughts that are causing those feelings, because it's always thoughts and core beliefs that are causing those feelings. And once you do that, you can start to create new thoughts and then prescribe yourself actions that are in alignment with your true values. So it's really about getting conscious. So before even thinking about making different decisions, let's explore why we're making the decisions that we're making. And as important as it is to understand nutrition and how or in what we eat, it's equally or even more, I'd argue, important to understand why we're eating and then how we're eating. And that's a whole nother topic.
No doubt about it. Let's continue here with your story. So you're doing this throughout college. At what point did you start to climb out of that dark hole and begin to feel more confident about yourself so that you could fully embrace becoming the incredible, sexy, fit, vegan Ella Majors that you are today?
Yeah, so out of college, went into the fitness industry, started working with clients, ran a few gyms, moved to Miami from North Carolina, and went and competed at the FAME World Championships. I won first place in the bikini division and second place in the fitness categories, and I did that completely just to prove that it could be done without eating animal protein at a time when, again, most people didn't even know what the word vegan was. So I did that. But again, all this while, I am being surrounded by bodybuilding culture, which is really disordered in and of itself. I mean, most of my bodybuilding friends would have a schedule like Monday through Saturday. They would restrict and be really strict about what they were eating. For them, it was mostly chicken, meat, broccoli. And then on Sunday, it would be a day-long binge with things like pizza and donuts. And although I didn't eat pizza or donuts, I was trying to kind of conform to this restricted schedule and be really, really, really strict with my food as much as I could until my willpower ran out, at which point I would binge. I could eat an entire jar of peanut butter in one sitting, in one night. And it would always be at night. It would always be at home alone. And then I'd hate myself for it, and I'd starve myself to make up for it. So as fit and healthy and, you know, and inspiring as I looked on the outside, I really wasn't that healthy on the inside. And as I was witnessing my own suffering around this, I was witnessing that same type of suffering with my clients who would use food and alcohol and drugs to numb and hide and distract themselves from their negative emotions. And so in my attempt to help my clients, I realized I had to help myself. And that's when my healing process began. I went back to school. I got my master's degree in social work. I started practicing yoga. And that's a whole story because I abhorred yoga until I loved it. And I will say that because I was Miss Muay Thai girl. I was a weightlifter. I was a kickboxer. I mean, I was black and blue all over. I would spar without sparring gear. It was kind of my MO to be this tough chick, you know? And so to slow down, but my body was hurting. And to slow down, to practice the being over the doing, that was painful. It was really painful. And I'm not going to lie, it took me 8 years of doing yoga before I actually liked it. And now, I mean, I can't even imagine my life without it. It's so special to me.
Wow. Wow. 8 years. Talk about an acquired taste. I mean, that's a really acquired taste. If you're putting in a decade to get to a point where you like it, can't live with that. I mean, 8 years, Ella Majors, my God, most people would move on after 8 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Talk about
the fortitude.
Well, in my
head, you know, they're doing the ohm, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is so stupid. Like, this is what I'm saying in my head. I refused to ohm. I mean, that's how kind of disconnected I was to spirituality at that point. Until I really started to learn to become the observer of my thoughts, to step out and to connect with my higher self and start to explore my programming and what was going on within me, and to start to see life as this adventure, right? This kind of game of sorts that I had the power all of a sudden. When I knew I had the power over my own thoughts and when I could coach myself into new thoughts, I mean, everything started turning around for me. It was amazing.
How is your eating today? And I'll preface that by saying that I still, having been a major binge eater and an overeater, getting up to 420 pounds, I still sometimes struggle with being the only person in the room who's eating anything. I don't want people looking at me. I feel like I am being judged. And I know that that's in my own mind. And I know that it's totally not reality that I'm still that 420-pound individual eating two pizzas and $20 worth of drive-through food. But do those kinds of thoughts still creep into your mind at all, or have you been able to completely move on?
Sure. You know, on occasion they do. But I think because of how I eat now, and it's a very mindful process for me for eating. Every meal, every bite I put in my body, I'm present with that food. And I chew every bite to a paste before I swallow. And so I connect with gratitude. I am there with that food, and I'm seeing it as nourishment, as fuel. I'm appreciating that food. So I think anytime with anything we do, right, when it comes from a place of gratitude, those other thoughts about, you know, what are people thinking about me, those kind of thoughts kind of start to dissipate. And I see, you know, I've been reading this book called Food is Yoga by Paul Rodney Turner. And that's how I kind of see food now. It's yoga. It is a yoga, and eating is a practice. And when I see it like that, then those other thoughts can kind of disappear.
And so you go from the dancing in college to then the fitness industry, which, as you mentioned, has its own kind of toxic culture. At what point, though, after that, were you able to completely break through and remove yourself from that kind of toxicity? And once you got through there, I would imagine, like, life on the other side must be pretty freaking sweet.
Yeah, you got that right. It was in 2013 when I was really starting to feel, you know, very full of life. I had healed my relationship with food, and I was ready to get back to my roots and my real purpose, which, being a personal trainer, was great. I'm great at it. And I wasn't really fulfilled doing it. So 2013 came along. People were starting to, you know, the vegan thing was starting to come around, even in Miami, which was very much behind the curve. There was tofu at restaurants. People actually knew what the word vegan was. And I was like, you know what? It's time. I'm ready to get back and do something more directly with veganism, and decided to launch my own brand. And I wanted something that showed people that being vegan is not a sacrifice at all, that it is something that is sexy, that compassion is sexy. And I wanted to redefine this word sexy from what is traditionally thought of as, you know, society's programming around what it means to be sexy, along with society's programming around what it means to be vegan. There were still so many stereotypes. Vegans were thought to be, you know, scrawny, and not that these have all gone away, but 2013, they were pretty strong still, that vegans were scrawny, or they were hippies, or they were angry, always up on their soapbox, you know. And I wanted to break free from all those stereotypes and really empower people to start thinking for themselves and using compassion as their compass to be able to navigate life. And compassion starts with compassion for ourselves, just like world peace, I believe, starts with inner peace. Like, we've all got to get back to ourselves, to becoming the best versions of ourselves, so that we can in turn help heal and bring peace to the world.
So if you were to open up Merriam-Webster's dictionary, turn to the word sexy, scratch it out, and write in your own definition, how would you write that, Ella?
Yes, well, I've got an acronym for sexy. So the S is soul aligned. So being very aligned with your higher self, with your soul. E is embracing your body. That means loving on your body, respecting it, accepting it exactly as it is. And I always say that that's a prerequisite for transforming it, is first accepting it. X, cheat a little bit on this one, exploring life with curiosity and compassion. And Y is you being you, you embracing exactly who you are and being confident in that. That's what I see as sexy.
I like that. I like that. That's a lot better than whatever's in there right now. That's amazing. I like that a lot. That's so positive and uplifting, and fits who you are. And I will say, I'm sorry that you had to go through so much junk to get to where you are today. Because the only person I've ever known of Ella Majors is super happy, vibrant, you know, definitely in tune with your emotions, and this endless, infinite love for animals. Like, you know, but I'm not sure at the same time that anyone is capable of becoming the person they are today without having trudged through so much garbage earlier in life. And Ella, I think that when you look at it through that lens, it almost gives you gratitude for all the nonsense that you had to go through earlier.
1,000%, Chuck. I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I don't regret anything that I've been through in my life. I really embrace it. It was tough. It was hard. And the connection I'm able to have to other people too, having been through so much and having gone through so many different experiences in my life, you know, I get to really now approach life from this place of having experienced so much. And that allows me to connect with other people so much more and to be more relatable. And with my brand, to be able to share these things and to help others through my sharing, that's what it's all about. And it all comes down to love. We're all connected. What I've been through, somebody else has been through. And if I can share how I got through it and help somebody, then that's what I'm going to do.
100%. Now let's shift the focus over to nutrition, because that is the focus. That is the heart and soul of the Exam Room podcast. So right now, what are the foods that you have in your fridge that you just can't live without? What is fueling your body today, Ella?
Hashtag salad for breakfast. When I discovered, and I went through, everybody asks about breakfast, right? The first meal of my day is usually a big salad with kale or arugula, avocado, some sort of a legume, usually white bean of some sort. I've got nutritional yeast. I've got this one brand of nutritional yeast that I just love. I thought I was a bad vegan for a while because I don't love the fortified nutritional yeast. So I found this brand called Nutrilicious that is not fortified, and it's got 4.5 grams of protein per serving. So just that in of itself. I've got greens and beans, man. That is like the base of everything I eat, is greens and beans, and then mixing in the colors of the rainbow, other veggies in there, some sprinkling some nuts and seeds, hemp seeds on top. Lots of greens and beans.
Love that so much. And, you know, just for the layperson out there, and you've got this incredible fitness brand, Sexy Fit Vegan. I'm just going to ask you this because I think it's a funny question at this point. Where do you get your protein from?
Greens and beans. I think that might be my answer for everything. But yeah, no. The highest, you know, I do eat a lot of tofu. I wouldn't say a lot, but I eat tofu. I eat lots of legumes daily. Don't do a whole lot of protein shakes every once in a while, depending on my workout schedule or how heavy I'm lifting, or just out of convenience. Sometimes I'll use something as a supplement, but generally it's whole foods. It's a lot of salads. It's a lot of beans. Like I said, that nutritional yeast has 4.5 grams in 1 tablespoon. So if I add 1/4 cup to a huge bowl of kale, and then add some beans, and then add some pumpkin seeds on top, I've got a salad that's got 25+ grams of protein in a salad. And it is so filling and so delicious and so satisfying and so nutrient packed. Getting protein is not a problem. I think people underestimate how much protein vegetables and legumes have.
It's so funny. Like the old part of my brain, the old Chuck version 1.0 is like, that girl is eating some hippie food. But the me today is like, giddy up on that. I got to get my hands on that salad. That sounds amazing. I love it so much. I can't let you go, though, also without asking you a couple of more things. For your clients who are just getting going, trying to improve their health, improve their sanity, as I like to say, because I often find that those things go hand in hand. They want a little bit more happiness and tranquility in their life. But they're really at a point where they're so struggling with their diet, their anxiety, their depression, their burnout. What are some of the first steps that you recommend somebody take when they're making this new leap in their life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it's really about taking a pause and developing self-compassion. That's where we've got to start, is taking a look at inside ourselves and pausing and starting to adopt some declarations. I call them declarations instead of affirmations or mantras. And the first one I think that really takes the pressure off is, the goal is not to feel better, it's to get better at feeling. When we're in a depressed state, it's not helpful to say, oh, we got to be positive, let's do positive thinking. It's stressful when you're not feeling well and when you're feeling down to think, I should be happy. Somebody said to me the other day, one of my clients, she's like, look around, I've got a roof over my head, I've got a beautiful home, I've got everything, I've got money in the bank, I should be happy. And that should put so much pressure and is so unhelpful. And I told her, you know what, accept whatever it is you're feeling and know that the goal is not to feel better at this point, it's to get better at feeling. So when we can allow those emotions to be there, when we can give ourselves compassion for whatever it is we're feeling and allow them, that is the start. That is the foundation for being able to start to transform how we're feeling.
And let me kind of turn that same question to you. How different does the future look to you today versus the girl who was exotic dancing her way through college, dabbling in drugs and alcohol, struggling with disordered eating? I would imagine there's quite a difference between the two. What's the future looking like today versus then?
It's such an adventure. That's what it is. Every day I get to get up and create. I get to create my future. And that's the empowering approach that I take with my clients as well. And it's about reinventing myself and knowing that, you know, what I think today isn't the other, one of the other declarations I use is, just because I have a thought doesn't make it true. And as long as we're approaching ourselves and the world and life with curiosity and compassion, and that's what I'm doing, then the sky's the limit. I'm doing more public speaking, which is so much fun. I've got the Planted Expo coming up in a couple months, speaking in Toronto and in Seattle. I've got my podcast that I get to connect with other amazing experts and share my journey as well on there. I've got my signature coaching program that's launching this year. I've got 22 Reboot up that's helping hundreds of people each year as well. So, you know, when I'm helping people, when I'm able to spread my message, it's just about how to continue doing that and sharing the transformation that I'm going through, which is ever evolving. And that's the fun about life, is being able to evolve from one day to the other for the rest of my life.
I think that that could be the name of the next venture that you do, Evolve with Ella. I think that that could be kind of cool. And listen, there's a link to your websites, ellamajors.com, sexyfitvegan.com. The podcast is there, obviously. The 22 Reboot program is there, as well as information on the forthcoming coaching program, too. But you mentioned one more time your compassion, which is indeed limitless. And I want to end by asking you about what I think is an all-timer of a name for an animal sanctuary, Hogs and Kisses Farm Sanctuary. Talk to us about Hogs and Kisses. Great name. Great name.
Yes, it was so great. One of my best friends in the world, Ann Molina, I helped her go vegan about, I think it might be 12 years ago now, and it's come full circle because she moved to Virginia and decided she was ready to start a farm animal sanctuary. And she did. It's a micro sanctuary. We're a small sanctuary. Of course, she asked me to be VP on the board, which I was so excited to accept, because it's one thing to, you know, help others change their eating habits. It's another, that it's a whole nother level of filling my own cup to be able to actually interact with the animals that I'm working so hard to save. So we've got hogs, obviously, farm pigs. We've got bunnies. And now we have just fundraised and are going to be welcoming turkeys onto the property, into our family. We're expanding from just a fur family to a fur and feather family. And it's a beautiful place in kind of the Appalachian Mountains of Virginia, outside of Charlottesville. I check it out. She has a great social media going, where you get to actually kind of feel like you're part of the sanctuary and learn about how it runs and what decisions we're making and the new animals that we're welcoming onto the land.
Hogs and kiss. I'm going to tell my wife about that. We're in the DC area, so that's only a couple of hours from us. So
yes,
I think that
we have
may...
a B&B.
You shut the front door, Ella Majors.
Yes, we do. And we're having a vegan burger battle in May. So maybe you come up for that. Maybe you could be our special guest.
Ella,
ooh, let's chat about that.
Don't tempt me.
Uh-huh.
Don't tempt me.
It might
just happen, my friend.
Woo!
All right. All right. All right, man. Dag on. You just made my day. Man, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ella Majors, sexyfitvegan.com. Check her out, of course, all over social media, ellamajors.com as well. You are just the best. Congratulations on your evolution, your transformation, the revolutionization. Is that a word? I don't know, but we're going to make it up. Either way, you are just an incredible human being, and it has been a true joy to speak with you for the last half hour or so. Thanks so much for being here today.
I appreciate you, Chuck. Thanks so much.
What an incredible inspiration Ella is. I'm so glad that she was able to find her way out of that dark place in her life and now thrive to not just help herself, but so many others around the world. That was a lot of fun. I can't wait to go on her podcast with her. It's going to be great. I'll tell you what else is going to be great. March 23rd. Saturday, March 23rd, I'm going to be hosting a live recording of The Exam Room with Dr. Michael Greger at the Planted Expo in Toronto. We're going to get started at 7:30 and dive into the pages of his latest book, How Not to Age. We're calling this a podcast to unlock longevity. And we're going to be taping it at the Enercare Center in Toronto. That's going to wrap up the first day of the Planted Expo. So if you're in the area and want to come out for a great time, let's do it. VIP meet and greets are available. And if you want to come with some friends, there's a special deal for you. Buy 3 tickets and get a 4th for free. So make a night of it. And then on Sunday, I'll also be speaking back at the convention about overcoming food addiction and sharing my story as well. So make it a healthy weekend. Hang out at one of the largest plant-based events in all of Canada for the entire year at Toronto's Enercare Center. Tickets for everything are available at plantedlife.com, or you can click the link in the episode notes. So, unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably heard of this. Fast food giant Wendy's finds itself in a serious pickle over plans for what was initially reported to be surge pricing for its menu. That's kind of like Uber, where you pay more to ride when demand is high. But now the company is trying to walk back those comments, saying that was never the plan. They say that they have no plans to raise prices when traffic at their stores is at its highest. However, the company is still sidestepping a question about pricing during heavier lunch and dinner hours, saying they don't have specific plans to share, but telling the New York Post that they will be testing, quote, a number of features we think will provide an enhanced customer and crew experience, end quote. They say, in theory, that flexible pricing would instead allow them to offer discounts to entice customers during slower times of the day. But skeptics here say they're not so sure that the flexible pricing will just be limited to discounts. Instead, they expect increases at other times, increases of up to an additional $1 to $2 per item. So obviously, this has caused a lot of backlash. A lot of backlash. But at the end of the day, the majority of what's on the menu at any price is going to cost you a lot more than a buck or two extra. Because in the long run, it can cost you your health. And that's priceless, isn't it? But if you want to quantify it, you can just look at the healthcare costs that are associated with it. I mean, just glance at a photo of their menu board. You can see advertisements on their menu board for the breakfast baconator and home-style French toast sticks, plus burgers and fries galore. So you see that, but meanwhile, the American Cancer Society's annual report just dropped, and it shows the grim impact and toll that these very items are taking on younger and younger people. Their data shows that the rate of colorectal cancer in people under the age of 50 is very much on the rise, and processed meat is very likely to blame. Couple that with a study published in Nutrition and Cancer that finds that when someone that young is diagnosed with colorectal cancer, they were very much more likely to be eating higher amounts of processed meat and less fruits and vegetables. So who knows? Maybe the surge pricing, or dynamic pricing as Wendy's likes to call it, maybe that will be a deterrent for a lot of people and work to benefit their health. And oh, by the way, one out of three adults here in the United States eats fast food on any given day, and the average household spends about $1,200 a year on it. That's about $100 a month just on fast food. Now, think about the bills that you have that come in every month. What else are you paying for that's about $100 a month? Is it your phone bill? Maybe your TV or cable bill? Your internet? Well, if you don't eat the fast food, then one of those bills could be paid off, or at the very least, it'll be like getting a big credit toward it every single month. And that is savings that'll add up in the long run for sure. So, just something to keep an eye on. Just something to keep an eye on with Wendy's. Lots more to come from that story. It's evolving. But I do think that that possibility for a silver lining is a very, very real one. Now, let's jump back into the exam room calendar here, because we're kind of going all over the place coming up. I'm going to be hanging out in West Virginia this September. This is a new date that we're announcing right now at the Wellness Weekend at the Kanawha Valley Resort in Davis, West Virginia. That's going to be September 27th and 28th. And this is led by our friend and Food for Life instructor, Brenda Workman, who she too is paying forward everything she's learned about healthy eating, because it was only 4 short years ago that she had high cholesterol and high blood pressure. She was taking medication for both. She was also overweight, but no more for Brenda. She changed her diet, she changed her lifestyle, she lost 60 pounds, she doesn't need to take any medication any longer, and her energy is through the roof. And so I am so honored to be taking the stage with her this year. And she's going to be serving up a lot of delicious food. There's going to be yoga workshops, and we're going to be giving you the knowledge and motivation that you need to make these same changes in your life to optimize your health. So you can sign up right now at BrendaWorkmanSpeaks.com or click that link in the episode notes. And coming up on March 6th on YouTube, we're going to be previewing the big Power Foods Revolution event that will be in Washington, D.C. on March 26th. Dr. Neil Barnard, he's going to be back with a look at his new book, The Power Foods Diet. Plus, Chef Dustin Harder and Sean A. Hayes will be joining me as well. So that is March 6th at noon Eastern on YouTube, or catch the replay right back here on the podcast on the very next day. But don't forget to join us in person in Washington, D.C., March 26th at the National Press Club, live and in person. A special episode of The Exam Room with Dr. Barnard and Dustin, plus Stephanie Ignafo from Plantspiration. And that is the date that Dr. Barnard's new book comes out. And to celebrate, everyone who purchases a ticket will get their own copy of The Power Foods Diet that night as well. And you can't beat that. So join us March 26th at the National Press Club. Tickets are available right now at pcrm.org/events, or you can click the link in the episode notes. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Ella Majors for being here and sharing her inspirational story with us, raising our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, Keep it plant-based.